This is your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. We now turn to an NPR investigation about the surge of black lung disease among coal miners. According to data from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, coal miners working in Kentucky, Virginia, and West Virginia, who've spent at least 25 years underground, have the highest rates of black lung disease in 50 years. Today's guest, Howard Berkus, and his colleague Justin Hicks, a data reporter at the Kentucky Public Radio Network, recently published their investigation titled Black Lung Rates in Appalachia Are as High as the 1970s, with thousands of miners sick. Howard Berkus is an award-winning investigative journalist who reported this story for Public Health Watch, NPR, Kentucky Public Radio, and Frontline. Howard Berkus has been reporting on the resurgence of black lung disease since 2012. He was an NPR correspondent for 38 years. He spent 20 years covering the American West and a decade focused on rural America. Hi, Howard. Thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate being with you. Thank you.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. We've been listening to you for years. Thank you so much for all of your great work. It is really heartbreaking that after decades of regulations and protests against the coal industry, we're still talking about workers dying from black lung disease. You have covered this issue since 2012. Why did you decide to dive in and cover this topic so closely?
Well, this stemmed from a coal mine disaster in West Virginia in 2010, the Upper Big Branch coal mine explosion, which killed 29 coal miners, the worst mine disaster in 40 years. And a year after that disaster, there was a report on what happened. And that report contained a sidebar that noted that the miners who were killed, their autopsies showed an extraordinarily high rate of black lung disease among that group of miners, including younger miners who had relatively few years underground in coal mining. And that's what first piqued my interest. And at that time, I teamed up with another reporter and another news organization, and together we documented what was a resurgence of black lung disease. That reporting came out in 2012, and we heard at that time that younger miners were getting black lung disease and that the disease was getting worse more quickly. And so I continued to follow up on that and broke another story in 2016 about what is now considered an epidemic of severe black lung disease among coal miners.
I'm guessing that a lot of people who don't have connections to the area might not know much about coal mining or these jobs. Can you talk about how things have changed since 2012? When you look at how many jobs are available, or do people still want these jobs? Are there other jobs available? Can you just give us a sense of what that looks like?
Well, what's always been the case is certainly in Appalachia, is that coal mining jobs were the best jobs around. They paid the highest salaries. They provided the best benefits. Some coal miners I met, they have the best houses. They have the best pickup trucks. They have, off-road all-terrain vehicles and the best shotguns. And there isn't really anything else in much of Appalachia that replaces coal mining in terms of what it offers miners and their families. And I've interviewed dozens and dozens of miners over the years, and almost to a person, they don't, even if they're sick and dying from black lung disease, they don't regret having worked underground because it provided such a good life for them and their families. So there isn't much of an alternative. Now, the other thing that has changed, and tens of thousands of them have lost their jobs since 2010. I believe it was somewhere in the neighborhood of 50,000 to 60,000 people who work for coal mining companies have been laid off as there was less use of coal for power plants and as coal mines shut down. So there are far fewer workers working, but there are still tens of thousands of coal miners working. And the other thing that's changed in mining over the last 20 to 25 years is that the big coal seams are gone, there are thinner seams that remain. The mining machines aren't any smaller. And so as the coal is mined, they end up cutting a lot of rock with that coal. Cutting that rock generates silica dust, and that is what is blamed for the increase in disease that we've been seeing.
We'll talk more about the coal seams in a minute, but one more question about the job itself. Is it still lucrative for younger coal miners taking those jobs today?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
The coal companies that aren't union pay decent salaries to prevent miners from wanting to unionize. And the union mines have good pay scales for miners. So, yeah, it's still a really lucrative job. I mean, I remember talking to a guy, this was back in 2011 or 12, a young guy just a few years out of high school who then was making over $80,000 a year in a coal mine. He couldn't have hoped to make that kind of money that soon after high school doing anything else.
Wow. So even the guys whose dads or granddads worked in the mines, knowing what they went through, this kind of job is just too hard to pass up. Because if you work at other jobs, it's you're scraping by in many cases.
That's true for some of them. You know, some have seen what their papas and granddads, dads, uncles, and we're also talking about women coal miners, by the way, who mine coal and have disease. They see what's happened. They've seen their relatives die horrible deaths from this disease. Some of them still, want to do it. Some of that has to do with being so closely tied to the region they're in or to the holler that they live in, they don't want to leave. And but some do. Some go off to school elsewhere and have other professions. And I've met some miners who have tried to convince, their kids not to go into coal mining.
I'm glad you mentioned women because we got an email from a listener who wanted to know if women go down into these mines.
There's a strong legacy of women coal miners. I've got to know one woman who was one of the sickest miners that I've met with black lung disease, who had one of the toughest jobs underground and had difficulty being accepted by her male colleagues and was the subject of some hazing, which she took as they accepted me because they were willing to haze me. But there is a strong legacy. There have been some documentaries done about women coal miners and some books. Very interesting stuff to look at to see what women have gone through underground.
Can you describe to us black lung disease? What is it exactly?
So what happens is that the miners end up inhaling coal dust and or silica dust that is present in the atmosphere as they're working. The dust particles are easily inhaled and they lodge in the lungs. If you have enough time between shifts, your lungs can expel some coal dust, but that's not true for silica dust. Silica particles are really, really tiny. They're easily inhaled, and once they're in the lungs, they stay there forever. And the lung starts to build up fibrotic tissue to fight the presence of these foreign particles that are in the lungs. And the fibrotic tissue, sort of surrounds the particles, the silica dust or the coal dust, and continues to build and continues to build. It just escalates over time. And so the fibrotic tissue basically compromises the ability of the lungs to do what they're supposed to do, which is to breathe. And for the miners who have advanced stages of disease, I mean, you look at their x-rays, they're just awful. Like 3/4 of the lung might be covered with this fibrotic tissue. And they eventually, with the advanced disease, there's no cure for black lung disease. They'll die from it if other organs don't fail first from having to struggle to work because the miner can't breathe properly. They ultimately, some essentially suffocate to death.
Mm. In one of your pieces, we see a photo of Tim Balthus with his wife, Fran. Like many miners with advanced black lung disease, Tim Balthus looks healthy, sitting with his wife, Fran, on their front porch in Pound, Virginia. But a scan of his lungs shows so much fibrotic tissue, a doctor told him he was surprised he was still alive. He's described what it feels like. He said, it's like opening your front door and letting the sun shine in with dust particles floating in the light, and then multiply that by 10 billion times. It's like a fog.
Tim, I've met a number of miners like Tim who have very advanced stages of disease. I mean, they're going to die from it unless they can get a lung transplant. It's going to kill them eventually. And they do look surprisingly healthy on the outside, but as soon as they begin to talk, it's hard for them to get through a sentence. Or as soon as they try any amount of exercise, simple things like picking up a grandchild or trying to walk up the driveway to get the mail can leave them exhausted and out of breath, needing to use an emergency inhaler, which Tim uses. Many of them are on oxygen 24 hours a day. Some of them are unable to sleep lying down because that compresses their chest and their lungs, so they have to try to sleep sitting up.
Wow.
It's a horrific thing for a human being to have to go through. Mm.
Today we're speaking with Howard Berkus, who was an NPR correspondent for 38 years. He reported on this latest story about black lung disease for Public Health Watch, NPR, Kentucky Public Radio, and Frontline. Howard Berkus has been reporting on the resurgence of black lung disease since 2012. Howard, I want to play one of the clips. I want a clip from your piece, and this is really so devastating to hear. Mackie Brannon was one of the sickest miners you've ever met. He was only 39 when he was diagnosed. Before we play the clip, can you tell us more about Mackie?
Mackie, who I met in 2016, was one of the sickest miners I'd ever met, and the youngest who was so sick. As you'll hear in this clip, he has a really difficult time talking without getting out of breath. And he has a legacy of black lung in his family. And he doesn't regret having been able to support his family like he has.
Well, here's the clip from Mackie Brannon.
I'll probably be the first one to be this bad in the family.
And what do you mean this bad?
For it to actually be this progressive and in this bad of shape. I mean, don't get me wrong, they can't breathe, but they can still get up and walk around and do stuff. The more I talk, the more I get out of breath. It's just a lot of pressure in my chest all the times.
Howard, that's so devastating. And to think about his family and his children having to hear him talk like this and struggle so much.
He was hoping to live long enough to see his kids grow up. He has. He's had a double lung transplant. He's having a tough time with it. Getting new lungs means you can breathe easier, but your body still has a rough time. So he has lived another 10 years since I interviewed him. And with the lung transplant, the mean survival rate for miners like Mackie is about a little less than 7 years. That's less time than other people with other problems who get lung transplants have. But it hasn't been an easy go for him, even with new lungs. And he was so young when he developed disease, and he hadn't worked that long underground. You know, I don't remember exactly the number of years, 10 or 12 years it might have been, 15. This was the kind of thing that used to happen after you'd worked 30 years and you were in your 60s and 70s. But now we're seeing miners like Mackey being diagnosed actually in their 30s and their 40s and with very severe disease like he has.
Earlier, you mentioned the coal seams. You report that in recent decades, the biggest coal seams in Appalachia were mined out. Mining companies turned to thinner seams that remained, digging through mountains to reach and then mine them. What is a coal seam?
Think of a coal seam as a strip of coal. And it used to be that those strips were huge, were massive, you know, 6 feet, 10 feet, even bigger. So a mining machine, which the cutting tool on a mining machine is maybe 6 feet, in the old days, you know, it would cut just through coal. And they never wanted to include rock when they were cutting because that would cause the quality of the coal to cheapen, and they had a hard time separating rock and coal. That's no longer true. The technology is such that they can separate rock and coal. And so now you have coal seams that are thin as a couple of inches, a foot, 2 feet, and the mining machines aren't any smaller. And so getting to that coal can require cutting through a mountainside, and that could be months of cutting nothing but rock. And then when you get to the coal seam, if you had to you know, go to that trouble to get to it, you're going to be taking a lot of rock as you get the coal as well, because the seams, the strips of coal are much thinner. And that's where the silica dust threat comes in, because in Appalachia, that rock is quartz. And when you cut up quartz, quartz contains silica. And when you cut up quartz, you're creating very, very fine particles of silica dust.
So what does the data say, given that, about why so many young miners are getting so sick?
It's really the toxicity of the dust. Silica is 20 times more toxic than coal dust alone. And so that toxicity means that the lungs react more quickly. And also it may not take as many exposures as it did with coal dust alone, you know, sort of in the old days. So you have younger miners who haven't worked as many years underground. I've talked to miners who've worked as little as 10 years underground who were diagnosed with advanced stages of disease in their 40s. Because they've got that toxic dust in their lungs are reacting more quickly to that foreign substance and that toxic substance. That's why these younger miners are getting sick.
We mentioned the data from the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health that found coal miners who've spent at least 25 years underground have the highest rates of black lung disease in 50 years. You interviewed Scott Laney, a NIOSH researcher, epidemiologist. He said, "I'm disgusted. This is not going to get better because of all the disease that's already in the pipeline. These guys are being treated like disposable widgets, not human beings. We're watching them die right before our eyes." Howard, what has the response been to this report so far?
The Mine Safety and Health Administration, which is the federal agency that regulates coal mines, hasn't responded at all. They've declined to respond to our request for comment twice now, and they declined to answer specific questions that we had. The mining industry did respond, and I have to say the mining industry has always been responsive when I've done stories. The mining industry's perspective is that because of the time it takes for disease to be diagnosed and to develop, this rate of disease we're seeing now is related to exposures that occurred 10 years ago or more and are not reflective of conditions in coal mines today. But the reality is that we've pulled the data on overexposure to silica dust in coal mines, which the Mine Safety and Health Administration tests for overexposure. They test the dust, they sample the dust, and there's data that's available, publicly available. We've looked at that data. And even though mining companies are doing better overall, doing really well overall in limiting the exposure. Last year, the compliance rate for the limit of silica dust that miners could be exposed to was 97%, which is an amazing rate of compliance. But the reality is that that other 3% involves lots of overexposures. And we found that since 2014, there were 4,000 instances of overexposure to silica dust in that time frame. And we also found that that since over the last 30 years that we checked, there were 21,000 instances of overexposure. So even though, you know, they may be doing better in controlling exposure, there still are thousands of miners being exposed. And because silica dust is so toxic, because it lodges in the lungs basically forever, those overexposures represent opportunities for disease. So it's still a huge problem that needs to be addressed. And, you know, one of the things that has occurred is that the Mine Safety and Health Administration under President Biden imposed a much tougher limit on silica dust exposure. And for the first time in its history, direct regulation of silica dust with the possibility of fines and shutting a mine down if there was too much exposure. And that never happened before. Mm-hmm. But that those new rules are on hold. The mining industry sued. A federal court has put enforcement on hold. And the Trump administration has said it's not going to enforce it. So miners are still being exposed today in the same regulatory atmosphere they were in the situation that created the disease that we're seeing today.
It's really incredible, Howard. You report that for 50 years, both Democratic and Republican administrations failed to act, and that finally changed under the Biden administration. But as you just said, it's changing again under the Trump administration. Thank you so much for your reporting on this. Just quickly, we have 30 seconds left. Are you going to continue to report on this issue?
I'm supposed to be retired, and I've been trying to pass the torch to Justin Hicks at Kentucky Public Radio, who's doing a great job. I do have some reporting plan, some more reporting plan, and some follow-up reporting on what we've just recently reported.
I imagine it's hard to walk away from this very important subject, especially now, given what's happening in the media. Howard Berkus was an NPR correspondent for 38 years. He reported this story for Public Health Watch, NPR, Kentucky Public Radio, and Frontline. He's been reporting on the resurgence of black lung disease since 2012. It was a pleasure to have you on the show, Howard. Thank you so much for your many, many years of work. Enjoy your part-time retirement, and we'll look for your future stories.
Thanks for focusing on this, Rose. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for engineering our show. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.